Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
So our mission today is really to give you a shortcut. We're diving straight into a set of sources that I think capture this profound anxiety that's gripping the professional world.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a stack of conversations, actual raw feedback we overheard at a coffee bar in late 2024.
Yeah, and these aren't just random people. We're talking about a senior programmer, Karpathy, a high-level consultant named Maya, and then a systems thinker, Jordan, who sort of ties it all together.
And the core issue is that the ground is shifting under everyone's feet because of AI. What was high-priced expertise yesterday?
Is becoming tomorrow's commodity. That's the core tension right there.
Yeah.
And our sources, they reveal this really painful truth. The immediate struggle, it isn't really about which jobs AI is going to eliminate.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, no. It's about this overwhelming feeling of being left behind. You know, while the rules are changing faster than you can possibly adapt, it's a pattern we've seen again and again in history.
These technological phase transitions. And that forces this this critical question. What determines who finds new value in all this chaos and who just gets, well, who gets commodified?
Right. What separates the people who chart a new path from those who are just stuck trying to optimize a path that's already obsolete?
And the sources, they managed to distill this whole challenge down into one simple, but I think pretty profound metaphor.
It's great. It's the difference between the person who becomes the Walmart greeter, whose valuable skills have been automated away, and the person who creates this huge YouTube channel.
The YouTube dad.
The YouTube dad. The guy teaching millions of people all the basic life skills a dad would normally teach.
Okay, so let's unpack that.
Yeah.
Because the insight from Jordan, this systems thinker,
yeah,
is that the difference isn't about intelligence. It's not about hustle.
No, not at all. It's about whether you have access to the right signals at the right time.
So our deep dive today is really focused on that. How you, the learner, can build that capacity to notice these new paths before they're obvious, before they show up in a market report.
We have to move past just reacting to the latest AI tool and instead focus on building the infrastructure for discovery. It's about learning how to stumble onto the next big thing, but, you know, intentionally.
Let's start with the crisis itself. Jordan calls it the magnitude 9 earthquake in these conversations. And Karpathy, the senior programmer, he is feeling this collapse of stability. Deeply.
He really is. He's caught in what the sources call the mastery trap.
The mastery trap. Okay, what does that mean?
Well, what's happening to him is that the cycle of mastering a new tool, you know, learning Claude, then GPT-4, then integrating Copilot,
yeah,
that cycle is now longer than the actual lifespan of the tools themselves.
Wow.
Yeah. So by the time he feels like he's actually competent, the entire underlying technology has shifted.
So he's running faster just to stay in the same place.
Exactly. And at the same time, the value of what a programmer is expected to contribute is getting, you know, thinner and more automated.
And what about Maya, the consultant?
Mm-hmm.
She sees her expertise, as she puts it, dissolving into general purpose intelligence.
Right. And that can sound a bit abstract, commodification, but let's make it concrete.
Please.
It means that a client, they no longer need to pay Maya $500 an hour to synthesize 6 different analyst reports into a market strategy.
Because a junior associate can do it.
A junior associate can spend 10 minutes with GPT-4 and get like 80% of the way there instantly. Maya's value was in the scarcity of that skill.
And now that skill is abundant and cheap.
And her years of accumulated knowledge, they've been devalued almost overnight.
So their first reaction, and this is what the sources capture, is to just double down on optimization, right?
Of course. Work harder, learn faster, put in the 80-hour week to become the best tool operator out there.
It's the standard professional response to any disruption.
It is. Compete on technical skills, compete on efficiency. But Jordan, the systems thinker, he's the one who challenges this. He asks, if optimization is the answer, why does the YouTube dad succeed?
Right, a guy who's arguably inefficient, working completely outside these optimized systems.
Exactly. And that gets us to the core shift. The answer isn't a better work ethic or, you know, more intelligence.
Cool.
No. No, the crucial difference is what the sources call the discovery problem. It's the capacity to see what is needed before it's obvious.
Before there's a clear market for it.
The YouTube dad, he wasn't using focus groups. He just noticed this recurring pattern of pain online. Things like, I wish someone taught me how to fix a leaky faucet or how to tie a tie.
A signal that millions of people were sending, but that was just ignored by mainstream media.
Completely ignored. So it sounds like the secret isn't just about getting new data. It's about training your mind to process these latent signals that are already everywhere.
So how do you actually do that? How do you build that capacity?
Well, that's the thing. That capacity, that ability to stumble onto a genuine need, it's not random.
It's built.
It is built. And the sources break it down into four non-negotiable elements. Think of it like a framework for exploration, something that's the total opposite of that optimization mindset.
This is where it gets really interesting for me, because these aren't skills you can just list on a resume. They're shifts in approach. So what's the formula?
Okay, so the first element is embedding in spaces. You cannot see real human pain or unmet needs from the outside. You just can't.
So the YouTube dad wasn't reading market reports on family dynamics in his office.
Oh, no. He was in the YouTube comments. He was in the niche Reddit threads. He was in the places where that frustration was being expressed, you know, genuinely.
So for someone listening, professional, this means you have to step away from just reading Bloomberg or Harvard Business Review.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, you need to be genuinely present in, say, the niche Discord, where the most advanced developers are complaining about a new API.
Exactly. You have to be present where your curiosity leads you, where the friction is highest. And that leads to the second element, adjacent pain.
Adjacent pain. Okay.
Discovery is almost impossible when you're trying to solve a problem that you have no intuitive connection to.
So the YouTube dad could recognize that pain because he probably had his own version of it.
Very likely. Maybe he was a new dad struggling. Maybe he was resolving his own father wounds. That adjacent experience lets you recognize the signal instantly because you already understand the frequency.
That's a powerful point. We're always told to look outward for market research, but maybe the most important signals come from the pain points we've already felt ourselves.
And that leads right into number three, cheap experiments.
Yes. The antidote to the big, scary business plan.
Exactly. Discovery requires low-cost validation. You can't commit everything up front. The YouTube dad didn't launch a six-figure media company.
He made one video.
He made one video to test a hypothesis.
So instead of Carpathy building this huge, elaborate application, he should maybe just write a quick disposable script.
And share it on GitHub. See if anyone else has that problem. And Maya shouldn't launch a whole new consulting package. She should offer a single cheap pilot workshop to five clients and just see what happens.
That's the core of it. Iterate based on results, not on some grand theory.
Right. And now the fourth element, and this is the most counterintuitive one, especially for people who are stuck in that optimization mindset.
Let me guess. It's space to notice.
It's space to notice.
Right. But if I'm struggling just to keep my job and everything is changing so fast, telling you to take unstructured time just sounds, I don't know, irresponsible.
And that is the core paradox. I get it. But if you are optimizing for survival, working 80 hours a week, grinding, your brain is simply too occupied for true pattern recognition.
It's just noise.
It's all noise. Discovery requires downtime. It requires mental space. Jordan even calls it boredom as infrastructure.
Boredom as infrastructure. I like that.
You have to accept some temporary inefficiency. You cannot optimize your way to a fundamentally new idea. It just doesn't work that way.
So this is the big pivot for you, the learner. We're contrasting that standard career approach, master the tools, optimize the hours, with this entirely different exploration approach.
Mm-hmm. Embed where you're curious, follow the pain, and crucially create that unstructured, seemingly unproductive time.
Because that's the only way to avoid what we're calling the greeter trap.
And that leads perfectly into this this common point of confusion that the sources picked up on. Maya, especially, was focused on networking.
Which is what we're all told to do, right? Build your network.
Right. But that advice is incomplete during a phase transition. It's not wrong, just incomplete.
So what's the distinction, the difference between that and this idea of discovery capacity?
We have to separate signal networks from discovery capacity.
Okay.
Your signal network, your contacts, your mentors, they help you navigate known paths.
So they help you grow the YouTube channel after you've already found the idea.
Exactly. They help you monetize it or get the next promotion in an industry that already exists. They come after discovery.
But discovery capacity, that's the four elements we just talked about.
Right. That's the act of exploration itself. It's the mechanism that finds the new path, the one that isn't on any map yet.
So what does this all mean for the listener? The advice to build your network isn't wrong.
It was just for a stable system. Networks are great when the road is already paved, but when the ground is shifting, you need the capacity to find a whole new road because your old map is garbage.
And the person who falls into the greeter trap, they're the one who tried to use their signal network to just optimize that old, obsolete path.
Precisely. They focused all their energy on getting, you know, marginally better at skills that were just about to be automated away.
So tool mastery, getting better at using the latest AI, that's optimization.
Yes. It's essential, but it's still optimization. It works in stable systems. But discovery capacity, the embedding, the adjacent pain, the space, that's exploration. And it's the only thing that really works during a phase transition.
And the sources capture this perfectly when Karpathy, frustrated that he can't come up with a brilliant idea, asks Jordan for a time management system.
It's beautiful, isn't it? He asks him, how much time should I spend on optimization versus discovery? Like, should it be 70-30?
He wants a formula for it.
He wants a formula. Huh. And Jordan just says, you're trying to optimize exploration.
Which completely defeats the purpose.
The whole point. Exploration requires you to be unproductive, inefficient, unmeasured, at least for a while.
You can't put a KPI on the act of noticing the need for the YouTube Dads channel.
The moment you start measuring it, you introduce the pressure of optimization, and that just kills any chance of genuine discovery. We're trained as professionals to focus on efficiency, on measurable outcomes.
Right.
But discovery demands this really uncomfortable acceptance that you can't control the outcome. You can only create the non-optimized conditions where an opportunity might become noticeable.
So to wrap up this deep dive, the AI transition is a phase transition. It is fundamentally changing the nature of professional value.
Yeah, that's the bottom line.
You can't control the chaotic outcome, but you can absolutely create the conditions where discovery is possible. The YouTube dad didn't control his success. He created the capacity to notice the signal.
And if the ground won't stop shifting under you, your focus has to shift. It can't be about mastering every new tool or trying to predict which jobs will survive.
It has to be about protecting the ingredients for exploration.
Exactly. You have to protect the spaces you embed in, the adjacent pain you follow, the cheap experiments you run, and this is the hardest one in our world, the unstructured time you protect.
This raises, I think, a really important question for anyone listening. If your goal is to build this discovery capacity, the question isn't what should I build or which tool should I master?
Mm.
The real question is, where should you embed yourself to notice what the world actually needs right now?
It's a great question.
Think about what spaces you need to be genuinely present in to hear the pain that everyone else is just scrolling past in their optimized, efficient search feeds.
That's something to mull over. It's a shift from being a spectator of the change to really becoming an explorer within it.
Next time on The Deep Dive, we're going to explore how one unique community, the Amish, have been navigating technological transitions for 200 years. It turns out they've essentially been using mainstream society as their long-term, low-stakes beta testers. We'll see you then.